Hello and welcome to Power of the Parent, the podcast. This series, we are focusing on a different topic each week, bringing you three things you need to know about whatever that may be, mainly from an employer perspective. But of course, there's plenty of reframing that parents could do to benefit from the content as well. We will be covering everything from parental leave transitions, managing boundaries, what to do when your talent pipeline looks a bit dodgy, tips on gathering feedback, and things like establishing parental support networks. So let's dive in. Hello and welcome back. Today I have a guest with me. I am joined by Karishma Mottiram, who is the founder of The Thought Box and a mental fitness specialist. Karishma is a psychology graduate and a certified positive intelligence coach with a diploma in life coaching, mindfulness, and mindfulness for children. All of that together makes me wonder what insight we could have in your brain, as well as knowing the importance of the practical when it comes to parental support. Karishma knows that the mental and emotional aspects of parenthood need a center stage all of their own. She believes that slowing down doesn't need to be a bad thing. She talks very candidly about mental fitness and the reality that it's not just a case of adding in more morning hacks. And today we are going to be diving into a topic very close to my heart and to the heart of oodles of my clients, and that is guilt, or the G word, as it's affectionately known in a lot of my workshops. So thank you so much for joining me today, Karishma.
Thank you so much for having me here today, Charlotte.
I can't wait to dive in, and I know what the three things are, which I will now share with you, dear listeners. So the three things we're going to be talking about is, number one, guilt is a compass, not a punishment. Number two, you can control your guilt by defining enough. And number three, you may be stuck in recycled guilt. I mean, they're all going to be juicy. And so let's dive in and take us through that first one, that guilt is a compass, not a punishment.
Yeah, I think it's very easy because guilt feels like such a negative thing. And it's basically, to me, guilt is a form of shame for most people, but it doesn't need to be. If we step back and look at it, it is a compass. Your feelings tell you something, and guilt is a feeling, right? It's something we're experiencing, and your feelings are going to stem from thoughts. Every feeling, when people say, I don't know why I feel this way, it's because you don't want to listen to what the thought is that's creating the feeling. And it's a natural thing. We all do it. We all feel that way sometimes. But if you step back and you look at guilt, that feeling is trying to tell you something about yourself. And if we are willing to listen to it, it can change everything. Because I believe there are two types of guilt. Well, actually, there's lots of forms of it. But for simplicity, we'll say there are two types of guilt. There is healthy guilt, and then we have unhealthy guilt. Now, most parents go through what I call healthy guilt, but it can become unhealthy if we don't start noticing that it's a compass, that it's guiding us. What I mean by that is it's teaching you about what matters, what you want to do differently. And maybe we don't listen to it because it's hard to do the different thing. We want to stick to what is easier, or what are the stereotypes? It's hard to break free from them. And I don't think that we stop and say, what is this guilt trying to tell me? Like for myself, one of the biggest challenges I had when my kids were in nursery, they're much older now, but when they were in nursery and I was working full time, was I felt terrible for the way I showed up at pickup. I was always exhausted and cranky, and I just could not deal with the tantrums at that time. Not tantrums, but they themselves have had a busy day, right? So everyone's exhausted. And I used to feel so guilty for not having energy for them. Instead of like just pulling, I'd be like, okay, so if I'm feeling bad because I don't have the energy, I want to enjoy this few hours that I have with my children, what can I do differently? What is my body trying, or my mind trying to tell me about how I plan my day? And then when I started looking at it, I realized if I created like even 5 minutes, like a 5 minute pocket of peace before pickup, that could be different because I want to be different. But I couldn't answer that unless I stepped away and pulled out my spotlight from that, because it was just on the guilt. It was just on the negative. And our brains are wired that way. It's so normal for us to be only looking at the painful bits. But if we're willing to step back and look at the bigger picture and ask the right questions, my God, everything can change for us. So it's like, are we willing to do that and pause?
I love that. And I share this story in workshops, and we go through a similar conversation in terms of, for simplicity, let's bucket the two different types of guilt. But my shared story of my unhealthy guilt was, and I'd love to hear your take on this, is when I returned to work, I didn't feel guilty for returning to work because you know where this is going, don't you? The shorthand here, before anybody writes me off as a terrible parent, because if you didn't feel guilty, you were surely a terrible parent. Like, I had a child that did not enjoy nap times. I started to lose the will with, what am I going to give her for lunch today? And I've got to do something different at tea time because that's what you're meant to do. And just some of the life logistics, I felt very ready to go back to the workplace. And yeah, I missed her, but the guilt didn't kick in about taking her to nursery. She had a lovely time at nursery. Wouldn't say she like settled immediately, but it was all normal stuff. She didn't ever cry at drop off, but she always used to cry when we picked her up, which the nursery practitioners used to say, this is totally normal. It's an emotional release. They're seeing you. It's fine. And then maybe 3, 4 weeks into being back in the workplace, and I had definitely picked up other people around me saying, oh, how are you dealing with the guilt of coming back to work, that kind of thing. And then I started to feel guilty because I hadn't felt guilty. Oh man, the head messer. It was ridiculous and probably had the same amount of impact as if I'd just felt guilty in the first place. So that was back in 2015. And the amount of times I have shared that story since as an example of unhelpful guilt, that is the thing that was making me feel guilty was actually other people's opinions, not my own belief system, not what I thought, but what other people were projecting onto me. The amount of times people are like, oh my gosh, that was me. That's the exact thing that happened to me. Like, why is this so broken? I would be very keen for your insight into that.
The first thing, and you already know this, is you are not alone in that. The number of women I've worked with who are like, I feel terrible that I don't feel terrible. So it's almost like we're punishing ourselves for not being what the world thinks we need to be. Instead of just giving ourselves permission to be happy, and hey, guess what? Our kids are actually really happy and thriving. I think there's this element of most working parents, no matter what they're doing or which way they're going, think they're doing something wrong because we can never make everyone happy. And actually, when you start experiencing that guilt, all it means is that you care deeply and you want to do well in both worlds and you want to be the best version of yourself. And how unfortunate that the world makes us think that's a bad thing. To do our best in every part of our life, to want to feel balanced, to know that my child and I need something that might be different from what you or your child need. We go on and we talk about the uniqueness of everyone, but we don't want to let people be unique. And I think giving ourselves that permission, if there's anything we're going to take away from this, I would love for people to remember that if we stop punishing ourselves for one, feeling guilty, and for two, trying to be who we want to be, we'll finally start hearing like what our feelings are telling us.
Yeah, I love that so much. I do think it's such a game changer to describe guilt in the compass side of things. And actually, something again that would I'd love your steer on is sometimes I will work with people who come with an aim of, I want to remove guilt. And please feel free to tell me if this is wrong. I'm really interested in your professional expertise. I'm not sure that the aim is ever to completely remove guilt. And it's a bit like when people say, oh, I just need to remove the emotion from this. Is that really the goal for anybody? Because we are humans who are thinking, feeling, navigating all of life's ups, downs, highs, lows, whatever you want to call them. And actually, going back to the logic of guilt is a compass. It's there to help us make decisions. It's there to help us make changes. If we didn't have that there, then for me, it's been more about how do we work through it? How do we utilize it? As opposed to, I just need to get rid of this. This is a thing like a hot potato that I don't want hold of. Is that something that you come across?
Yeah, it's very common for people to say, I just want to feel good again. I don't want to feel this emotion. I don't want to, or people say, I'm guilty. that actually you're just feeling guilty. And like we said, feelings are signals, they're signs. And can you imagine if we had no compass? Okay, guilt is a part of a compass, right? It's guiding us. Happiness teaches us what we want more of. Sadness teaches us what we care about, what bothers us. Every feeling teaches us about ourselves. So I don't think we should remove guilt. I think we should understand it. I think that the goal isn't to remove feelings, it's to use them to develop. And with guilt, especially, I think it's about recovery. So we're all specialists in different ways, right? And I have the number of people who come to me and say, oh, well, don't pretend you're perfect. This happens. And I'm like, of course, I still struggle. But what's changed is my recovery time. Right? The goal isn't to get rid of all the problems. The goal isn't to remove the challenges. That's not life. Life is 50-50, probably half great, half really hard, and things to get through, and challenges and challenges. That's what life is. The goal is how can you recover from it? And is my recovery going to forever take me months or years, or am I going to get quicker and faster at recovery? There is no magic wand to get rid of challenges and feelings. People can say it all they want, but you cannot stop a feeling unless you have full control over your thoughts. And that's saying you can control your mind to never think certain things, which is impossible. So it's more like
100%.
when you feel guilt and you feel this thought that I should feel bad that my child is in nursery, okay? Hypothetically. Why do I think I should feel bad? Guess what? As soon as you answer that, you are not going to feel as bad. You're going to realize that I am just doing something that makes other people uncomfortable, but I'm doing the right thing for me and my family. And just asking ourselves the right questions helps manage that guilt rather than remove it.
Yes. Oh, 100%. This podcast is going to be sent to so many people. I think that is a really lovely segue into your second point here, which is that you can control your guilt by defining enough. Can you walk us through that, please?
We have like this invisible standard. It keeps going up. Like as soon as we hit it, somehow like it goes up again. I know I said enough when we talked about this, but I'm almost going to play with this and say, could we say if we define what like your best is as well?
Yes.
Because I think we have this idea that we should always be a certain way. And that is the enough. The best is what is enough. But if we stop and think about it, our best changes every day. And this is not just parents. So the parents who feel bad, oh, my best changes because I have children, I may have less sleep or dealing with other issues. Everyone's best changes based on what's happening in their life, based on how much sleep they got, based on how they've eaten that day or the day before. Your best fluctuates. So you have to allow and appreciate that instead of beating yourself up because today you had less energy than yesterday. So the number of parents like, I feel terrible that this week I took take out this many times or had ready meal, whatever it is. I'm just making things up now. But actually, there will be other weeks where it's completely different. And that is true for everyone. So what do you define as enough based on what happened that day or the day before? Or are we pretending that we're robots and we're not human? Because that's what happens. We try and be superhuman. And maybe that's what we should say. Like guilt comes when you try and be superhuman, right? We're not giving ourselves a chance to experience life because we're putting so much pressure on us, on ourselves to be this best version 24/7. And if you don't mind me adding something to that, which is probably steering us off a little bit, so do forgive
Go
me.
for it. Go for it.
But this idea of best and enough all the time, I love to remind parents, just imagine for a moment that you were always at this invisible, crazy high standard. What kind of pressure are we putting on our children to be perfect and to be their best, where best is not something that's allowed to fluctuate? We want to be these perfect parents all the time. And to be raised by a perfect parent is going to be one of the hardest things for a child. So it's like when we give ourselves permission to fluctuate, We automatically give them that permission, and how beautiful that is for your relationship with your family.
Oh, I love that you just went off on that tangent. I'm also thinking like the show notes and how I want to talk about this line so that we get people listening to it. I probably want this on a t-shirt, but what I've just written down that you said there is that best is something that fluctuates. And that might be one of the kindest things I think we could ever do or say for ourselves. We sometimes have this conversation at home about when people use the phrase giving 100%, but it's not as black and white as 100% is always equal, which I'm sure there's mathematicians going, what is she talking about? But my take on this is some days we are at 50% capacity or 50% focus and attention or whatever it might be, however you describe it. And that is my version of 100% today. And I've still given all that 50%, but that is 100% of what I could have given today. Again, I'm sure there's still mathematicians screaming at me, but this idea that we are equal, we know that our attention and motivations fluctuate. So does our willpower. We're not robots. We are these beautiful, rich, tapestried humans who have got a lot to work through and a lot to figure out. And I do think there's an element here, and I won't take us off on too much of a tangent, but there is a lot to be said for some of the things that are peddled on social media. And I think we're talking a lot about parents here. There's a lot of parents hanging out on social media. There's a lot of people presenting things that are just unattainable to most people. I don't even just mean from a financial perspective. I mean from what appears to look like time and attention that's being given to children. I am choosing my words carefully because I don't want to bash other people, because I appreciate for some people that is a job. You're seeing a tiny snippet of their day. All of those things are true as well. But I think, have we ever really questioned some of the repercussions of social media? I know that we do in the moment, and I know that we are now retrospectively saying, what on earth have we created here? But there is still an element of let's show the polish and let's show that I take my children on these amazing days out, or that I do all of this for work and I still manage to cook from scratch every night. And aren't I amazing with the domestic load and the mental load? I find it very tricky because I am one for boundaries, and I think you don't owe anybody your full story. Like, if you're having difficulties or a rubbish time, you might not want to plaster that all over the internet. I think it's sometimes that veil of a weird, inauthentic life that I think plays with my head the most. But you can see it with how difficult it can be, therefore, for people to define what their best looks like, their definition of success. I'm sure you talk about that loads with clients as well. So do I. That your definition of success matters, and it doesn't have to be the same as somebody else's. And therefore, comparison can creep in, guilt will creep in, all of those things. Don't really know where I was going with that, other than a monologue about the evils of social media, but that's the headspace it sent me to.
No, but the thing is, it's because social media feeds this idea of shame when you can't do it, right? So, how I mentioned earlier that guilt is a form of shame. And, like, would I shame my closest friends and family for having a harder day? Never, but I shame myself for it. So, I think when we start bringing in social media, and it's almost like, while the intention of these people and influencers or whatever it is or whoever it is probably not to shame us, it's kind of the impact that we have. And we need to remind ourselves, this is where we have to stop. We have to be able to shift from external to internal. And I think the biggest power, the biggest way to manage your guilt is being able to start looking inside. We're in a world where we're always looking externally. What are the other parents of the school saying? What is my team at work saying? What is social media telling me? But actually, we've stopped listening to our own feelings when they're the good feelings, when they're actually telling us the right way. And for some reason, not for some reason, we are wired to pay more attention to negative feelings, but we end up just looking at the negative feelings that are actually reinforcing everything that's not true. Reinforcing things that don't actually necessarily mean or matter to us. So we're allowing social media to allow us to guilt ourselves instead of listening to ourselves. And I think that's really important. So when we're online, ask yourself, do I want to shame myself for something I know is probably not true? Right? To be honest, we all know because we're swiping so fast, our brain almost doesn't get to register it. I know we've gone off a little bit, but really quickly, I'm reading Atomic Habits right now. I started it and I stopped and I've picked it up again. And on there, it talks about creating an environment that gives us the habits that we want. And I have recently, because I'm doing a little bit more on Instagram, a bit hesitantly, but I am, I find myself in that situation. Like I find myself scrolling. Oh, how are these people running their business and posting so much? And it's been really difficult. And so since I started reading it, I actually have changed my sleep times on there so that I don't get notifications once the kids come home. And I also keep my phone up in the loft when I'm working so that I'm not checking constantly. And it just reduces the amount of time I can set myself up for that. So finding, because I know it's not true, but I almost have to create the physical space in order to get myself to think differently. That makes sense.
Yeah, brilliant, perfect sense.
But if we bring it back to what we were talking about, I think the idea is to remember that I guess the biggest thing about managing guilt by defining enough is to remember that your best is allowed to look different every day, and enough looks different every single day.
Yeah. There's going to be a whole range of t-shirts. Let's move on to the third point here, because I'm really interested to get into this one, that you may be stuck in recycled guilt.
So we all experience things that we have done that we don't love. And sometimes a fear of it repeating or something even slightly similar happening can trap us. Because what happens is if we haven't dealt with it the first time, if we haven't managed it, and let's be honest, how many people have stopped and managed their guilt? If you consider the number of parents around this world and the number who actually go and work on this stuff, because it's hard. I'm not blaming anyone. It's not as accessible to do this stuff. We spoke about that earlier. How often do we manage it? And if you don't manage it, then every time something similar happens, not only are you feeling it again, you're also like reliving what's happened in the past, which then intensifies that guilt. Now, this can be true for something we've done ourselves, or it could be true for carrying guilt from like previous generations, things we have seen growing up as children that we saw a parent or a grandparent feel guilty for something, or they've done something that doesn't feel good to us. And then we are like, oh, I've just done this, or I'm about to do this, or I'm so scared I'm going to do the same thing. And we are carrying all this weight that, one, we don't need to. We have enough of our own challenges and weights to carry, but unfortunately, we end up carrying all this weight for other people. And secondly, we don't always forgive ourselves for previous mistakes. And then we continue to punish ourselves. So looking at guilt as a way of we're punishing ourselves rather than guiding ourselves is where it goes wrong for a lot of people. So noticing, when am I punishing myself for caring? Right? Because guilt is caring. Guilt is saying, hey, I'm human and I'm struggling with something. Why would we punish ourselves for that?
Yeah. You see it happen so frequently, though, don't you? That phrase of recycle guilt and some of the examples that you've given there. I mean, it's almost like we should really be making sure every adult, as standard, goes through a session with somebody to help us work through some of that secondhand or generational guilt or what's been passed along. Or because you do hear it a lot with parents, don't you? From a perspective of, I feel guilty that I've just replicated how my parent was with me. Like, I didn't want to be on the receiving end of that. I don't want my kids to be on the receiving end of that. You hear it happen quite a lot. I think one of the things that springs to mind is it's kind of tied to everything that we've talked about here, really. But something that I know might be on the minds of some people that listen to this podcast, because there are a lot of line managers that listen and leaders who are making decisions around, how do we help parents in the workplace? Guilt shows up in the workplace an awful lot for parents. I'm stating the obvious here, but things like people will say, I feel really guilty that I'm not doing a good enough job at home, but I'm also not being a great co-worker because of insert the bazillion reasons as to why you might feel like that as a parent. I do get a lot of line managers saying to me, somebody on my team just is constantly feeling guilty, or they're saying they feel really guilty about not being here, or that they feel guilty about not being at home, and that's impacting them at work. Is there anything that you would share with those line managers to help them help somebody who is moving through that guilt cycle, shall we call it?
Yeah. So I'm going to answer this question a little bit away from guilt first, and then I'm going to try and tie it in for you if that's okay. Yeah.
Sounds great.
So the biggest thing, and I've actually just done a talk on this, so that's why it's really fresh in my mind.
This wasn't planned, this question.
It
I've
wasn't planned.
completely
Thanks,
thrown Karishma
Charlotte.
into it. Yeah, sorry about
No.
that.
I actually love this because one of the reasons why I shifted into the work that I do is because of this very thing. It broke me. It completely broke me to feel a certain way in the workplace. And when I stepped away and looked at the bigger picture, which is what I encourage everyone to do for everything that doesn't feel good, is I realized that so much of my lack of confidence and guilt and all that was coming because I didn't think I was doing a good enough job, right? But we take on certain roles in the workplace because of something we love, something we studied and we care about. And I hope most people are lucky enough to be doing something that they love. And the best way to feed the confidence so people start feeling better and are willing to look at the bigger picture is by fueling them. Now, too many people go back to work and end up focusing on the hardest parts of work, which is constantly draining them. Okay. Now, if you have someone who is constantly drained, you have a parent who feels guilty because they are constantly drained with the hard stuff at work and the hard stuff at home, they don't have a lot of energy to be positive. Actually, it takes a lot more energy to be positive sometimes when things all feel wrong. So, what I always suggest is sit down and identify the parts of the role that feel amazing to that parent. What does that parent love doing in the workplace? And you know what? Make sure that is a good bulk of their job. I'm not saying they don't have to do anything that they don't like. We all have parts of our job we don't like, so please do not misunderstand that. But when the drainers begin to outweigh the fuelers, that is where problems begin to arise. And for me, in my personal story, I'll say it very quickly, is the things I love the most were taken away because they were actually being too nice. Don't worry about that because you have drop off. Don't worry about coming to this meeting because it's very early and we don't want you to not drop your kids off. And I'd be like, no, I want to be there. Like, no. And then I started thinking, maybe they don't think I'm good enough. I'm not doing a good enough job. That's why they don't want me here. And the knock-on effect of that, my whole family paid a price for that. And we don't want that to happen anymore, which is why I encourage every line manager and every parent to identify what do you love about your job. Make sure in your one-to-ones you are highlighting that I need this in order to show up as my best self. Because when you are doing things that feel good, it helps fight that guilt. It helps you be willing to look at guilt as a compass. And actually, that guilt isn't going to creep up as much because you're feeling better.
Thank you for sharing that. It's like you've been sat in some of my one-to-one coaching clients this week, which she hasn't. That conversation that you've just described between somebody who's returned and a line manager and saying, what do you really love? And that doesn't mean that we're signaling we can design jobs around people. I think that happens very few and far between. To be totally honest, when I have that conversation with coaching clients, sometimes I get pushback from them that says, that's going to sound like I'm cherry picking what I want to do. And that's not what I want to be. I don't want to come across like that. And some of this stuff can take time, can't it? So it might be that it feels a little bit uncomfortable to share. These are the bits that I love. These are the things that play to my strengths and I don't want to lose them. But being able to do that over time, you don't have to go in, I don't think anyway, and it's not a one-hit wonder conversation. This is about revisiting it, and both for you as a parent or you as a line manager, building up that connection again. It's come up a couple of times recently with people around feeling disconnected from the workplace, and you can hear it suddenly become a quantitative stretch for people rather than qualitative, and it isn't playing to their strengths. It's just putting more and more on their to-do list. I've just written a parent newsletter about this, that isn't where connection happens. Volume of stuff doesn't bring about connection. That just brings about exhausted people who just think, God, do more, God, do more. But seeing it through that lens of what do I really love doing? How therefore is that going to help me show up better in the workplace? I then will be able to, like you say, you manage that guilt better. You can have a better quality conversation with your line manager, or you, line manager, can have a better quality conversation with your direct report. I find sometimes there is a simplicity to this that doesn't always feel easy for people. But we really do have to take a step back and stop overcomplicating it. So I think once we accept this is not about saying, oh, if you don't like that part of your job, of course you don't have to
No,
do
I have
that.
not seen that.
But sometimes people go into it with that view and you're like, no, that's not what this is. Like, hear what I'm saying. Just wait to respond. What I'm saying is those dodgy parts will still be there for people. But then how we help them do those parts will be very different. So we've been talking about homework with my eldest daughter who has just started high school. And she said, I have to get the things that I don't enjoy doing, I have to do those first and get them out the way. And I'll ideally get them done, especially if she's got homework at a weekend. I want to do those first thing in the morning because that's when I know I'm most awake. And I'll save my creative stuff that I like to do. And she loves a bit of stationery. She's like a mother. If she's got something that she's got to highlight or annotate or go and do some things on her drama script, has been one of the things. She will save those for afterwards as almost like a bit of a treat, but also because she knows that takes less brain power for her. And that's one of the things that, because we're all adults, surely we can have a conversation with people that says, you can design your day. You might not be able to design your role, but let's look at what we can put into practice. And I think going back to your point earlier about your best fluctuates, this isn't about perfection either. So you might not be able to do it every single day where you get to design this perfectly energetically aligned day. But if you can do that more days than not, then surely that's the win. That's part of my definition of success anyway.
No, absolutely. And I think one thing to add is parents and line managers of parents sometimes feel like, am I then treating them differently or am I being treated differently? I'm being difficult. But actually, the essence of what we're saying applies to everyone. Imagine an organization where, parent or not, people's roles and the teams, as you hire your team members, were in a way where people's strengths and fuelers are all a little bit different. And the drainers are all a little bit different. So actually, it could be balanced in a way where most people have fuelers outweighing drainers. That would be the most incredible team if we actually, in an interview process, looked at that and we just balanced it out a little bit. Because then everyone has energy, everyone is showing up better, and we're not really needing to treat parents differently because it's for everyone. There's nobody in the world that wouldn't benefit from this.
I could not agree with you more. It's, yeah,
So
scared.
even the parents who find it hard to talk about it, instead of making it about them, say, one thing I'm learning is, and actually, is there a way we could do this for our team? We can make it a project together so that everyone benefits. It doesn't have to just be about me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think let's leave it here for today. I feel like there's definitely a 2.0 version in the making. People that have listened in today, where can they come and find out about how they work with you or access more of your brilliant content?
Oh, thank you. I think the best way is probably I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Instagram, and also you can visit my website. There's a lot of free resources on there. There's actually a free 15-minute hack to reconnecting to who you really are, which definitely boosts confidence and helps people show up well. So I would recommend that. There's tons on the website, newsletters, which is a really fun newsletter. It's one word once a week, and it helps shape your week. And I would highly recommend that to parents
Oh,
everywhere.
I'm going to go sign myself up. I will put all of the links to everything that Karishma has just mentioned in the show notes, so you can head there and just hit a link and the work will be done for you. Thank you so much for joining me today. It has been an absolute pleasure to chat with you.
You as well. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Power of the Parent, the podcast. If you have got a few spare minutes, who am I kidding? Of course you haven't got a few spare minutes, but if you would like to choose to spend a few of your minutes giving me any sort of review or rating, I would massively appreciate it. It does help other people find it, and it also lets me know that I'm hitting the spot with listeners. For more free resources, you can head to the show notes, where you'll find a link to the Power of the Parent website, or do head on over to LinkedIn and give me a follow. Search Charlotte Speak and my grinning face should pop up. Until next time, take care.